supporting WHYY Penn Medicine, helping to find new cures for cancer. With life-saving clinical trials and advanced surgical techniques, Penn Medicine is offering more hope for patients everywhere. Learn more at PennMedicine.org/cancer. Penn Medicine, what's next?
Welcome to Voices in the Family. I'm Dan Gottlieb, your host. We all hate to be lied to. It hurts. Sometimes it embarrasses us. It makes us feel deceived. It breaks trust. But if we're going to be completely honest, we all lie.
It's a nice sunny day, and I don't really have a cold, but my golf clubs are in the car. I call out sick.
You know, I lie because I'm a coward. I don't have the courage to tell the truth all the time.
I mean, yeah, there's occasional lies here and there, white lies, just to get out of things, or for say my boyfriend wants to do something I don't want to do, and I'm like, I'm doing something else, and I'm really not just sitting there on my butt, you know?
I just found out recently, I've just been diagnosed with terminal cancer, and so my view of life is a little bit different now, and I realized, you know, there were things that I might have lied before because I wanted people to think more of me or whatever, or, you know, and I realized it really doesn't make a difference, and that truth is so much better.
Well, of course, truth is so much better, but what if your partner asks you if you like their new haircut, or if the dinner they made is good, or if you think your new coworker is attractive? Our relationship with the truth is like all our other relationships, fraught with ambivalence. So, on today's show, we'll talk about lying, why we do it, if it's ever okay, and how it affects relationships. My guests are Sabitha Pillai-Friedman. She's a relationship and sex therapist at the Council for Relationships here in Philadelphia. Sabitha, welcome.
Glad to be here.
And my other guest joining us by phone is Bella DiPaolo. She's a visiting professor at UC Santa Barbara. She studied lying extensively and has working on a new book on that very topic. She's also authored Singled Out, about the psychology of being single. Bella, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
And if you'd like to join our conversation, our number is 888-477-9499. Again, that's 888-477-9499. If you lie, if you have been lied to, if you want to clarify something about it, give us a call. So, Bella, let's start with you. I'll throw out a few names. Mayor Marion Barry, President Bill Clinton, Newt Gingrich, how many Catholic priests, if not the Catholic Church, Enron, James Frey, they're everywhere. And most of us are outraged about it. But in terms of our basic character structure, are they the same as we are?
In many ways, yes, because many of the reasons for lying of the people who are in the popular press, the people we hear about all the time, are the same as the people who called in and started this show and told you about their reasons for lying in everyday life. The reasons are usually very psychological. You know, we usually think of liars as crass and exploitative and out to make a quick buck, and sometimes they are. But much more often, people are lying because, as one person said that you talked to, they just can't face the truth, or they want other people to like them or to think well of them, or they just don't want to feel embarrassed about who they really are or what they really know or what they've really done. And so they lie to make themselves look better and feel better and to make other people look better and feel better.
I wrote an article for the newspaper a couple of months ago about the concept of saving face.
And yes,
what we're really doing when we're saving face, we're really not saving anything. We're saving our story, our illusion.
Yes.
We're really hiding something. Is that a form of lying when we save face?
Yes, and that was something interesting I found when I was doing all these studies of lying, is that when people thought their lie was for a good reason, they thought it shouldn't count as a lie. So no, that's not how it works. If you're intentionally deceiving someone, that counts as a lie. And even if you did it for what you think is a good reason, that doesn't let you off the lie hook. And also, sometimes what we think is a good reason for lying isn't agreed to by the person to whom we're telling our lies. So,
well, let's get to your study. You did an exhaustive study in 96.
Mm-hmm.
Where you found the average person lies about twice a day.
Yeah, that's right. What we did was to have people keep diaries of all of their interactions that lasted 10 minutes or longer and all of the lies that they told during those interactions. And that's how we found that people lie an average of about twice a day or about once in every three or four conversations.
How did you define lying? How did they?
We define lying as any time you deliberately tried to mislead someone. And that's what gets the Clinton story interesting, because when he said, "I did not have sexual relations with that woman," I think he was actually trying to tell a literal truth. So in his mind, he's defining sexual relations as something very specific, and he didn't do that very specific thing. So he can say, "I did not have sexual relations with that woman," and he can think he's telling the truth, and other people can have a different idea. And, you know, people started calling that Clinton-esque, but in my research, that's human-esque. People, again and again and again, try to make it as if what they're saying isn't really a lie. They try to get off on technicalities. And I think it helps them feel like they're not really lying, and so it makes it easier for them. But I don't think it really gets them off the hook in terms of whether they're deliberately trying to mislead other people.
Do men lie more than women?
Well, you know, they don't. If you just count number of lies.
I was scared waiting for that answer.
But there are differences in the kinds of lies men and women tell and who they tell their lies to. So if you think of two main kinds of lies that are told to make you look better, I ran 20 miles in 2 minutes, or, you know, those kinds of lies, versus the kinds of lies that are told to spare other people's feelings. Oh, I know just how you feel, what a great meal, all that kind of stuff. Well, usually people tell many more of the first kind of lies, the self-serving lies, than the nice lies that are meant to spare other people. And that's true when men are talking to other men, when men are talking to women, when women are talking to men. But when women are with other women, they're just as likely to tell what I call those kind-hearted lies as they are to tell the self-serving lies. So when people say, "Oh, I know just how you feel, I would have done that too, you look great, you did the right thing, I loved your meal," they're much more likely to be women talking to other women.
You know, it's interesting. I'm listening to this through the ears of a clinician.
Mm-hmm.
And when you first described the other focused lie,
mm-hmm.
I thought, well, that is kindness. There's an element of compassion there.
Yeah.
But that can be a lie.
Yeah.
When you agree with someone,
mm-hmm.
and
mm-hmm.
verbally, and you really don't agree with them,
mm-hmm.
that's a lie. And that's
and
not
this is
compassion.
What I think is really interesting psychologically about the phenomenon of lying, is that in the abstract, we can say, "Oh, lying is bad, we don't like to be lied to, we don't want to tell lies, we want to think of ourselves as honest." And if lying never conflicted with anything else we valued, then it would be pretty straightforward. But what happens in these lies that you just described as, you know, gracious and tactful and, in a sense, kind, is that the truth bumps up against something else we value. In those cases, often, it's the other person's feelings, or maybe your loyalty to someone as a friend. So the most interesting situations psychologically are when you cannot both be honest and kind at the same time.
That's interesting. We're talking about lying, liars, who tells lies, how we all tell lies, and what lying really means and what it does to us. My guests are Sabitha Pillai Friedman from the Council for Relationships and Bella DiPaolo. She's a visiting professor at UC Santa Barbara. If you want to join the conversation, we're at 888-477-9499. That's 888-477-9499. Tell us about your lies you have told people you are close to, and why you've told them, or times you've been lied to. Again, that's 888-477-9499. Well, Sabitha, lies wouldn't be lies. They wouldn't be anything if they weren't in the context of a relationship.
Absolutely.
So I would imagine that some relationships are more fertile for dishonesty than others?
Well, I think most relationships are fertile for lying in the beginning, in the early stages, because I would call it the honeymoon stage. During the honeymoon stage, when we initially meet each other, we want to put our best foot forward. We do not want a partner or the other person, our date, to know anything bad about us. So we lie about ourselves. And we also lie to ourselves about what the other person is like. So we do not see any weaknesses in the person. We interpret all aspects that may not be savory to us by, you know, interpreting it differently. Well, he's not very fond of Indian food, or he's not very fond of ethnic food. I'm very fond of it, but maybe he will grow into it. Maybe he will start getting into it. I remember when I first met my husband, I told him that I cannot imagine getting married to somebody who was not into hiking, because I was an avid hiker. And my husband said, well, I'm a very good hiker too. And I found out eventually, after a couple of weeks, that he did not own a pair of hiking boots, which led me to believe he was more of a walker than a hiker. So, you know, he was really putting his best foot forward because he wanted to stay in the game. He wanted me to consider him, you know, as a valid spouse, so as a potential spouse. So in the honeymoon phase, couples usually lie quite a bit. But 6 to 9 months into the relationship, when the relationships becomes more long-term and the truth starts to unfold, conflicts arise. And some relationships at this point take a different turn, because some relationships would view conflicts as normal and natural to a relationship, and they would deal with it on their own or seek professional help. So they make the relationship authentic, whereas there are some other relationship where the people are conflict avoidant, they may not be comfortable with conflicts, and they may worry any differences or any conflict may unhinge the relationship. So they start lying to each other, and they maintain this lying pattern.
This gets us back to the James Frey phenomenon, who wrote A Million Little Pieces, and people who spin tremendous lies. I'm going to come back to the issue of your husband, and we'll talk about him for a little bit. He's not bigger than I am, is he? I'm not.
He's not,
here.
And he loves hiking now, and it's a very important part of our relationship.
Okay. So we can do what if. Okay. So what if, you know, a few weeks into the relationship, he could say, well, I'm an avid hiker. I just lost my hiking boots. And the lies continued, versus someone who would say, well, I just stretched it because I really wanted you and I didn't want to lose this relationship. And what is it about the person and what is it about the relationship that could make it go one way or the other?
Well, some people have a hard time hearing the truth. When we were talking about the hiking boots, I said, oh, you don't have a pair of hiking boots. I think we should go out to EMS and buy a pair of hiking boots. So I did not even make it a lie. I just, you know, said, well, let's go buy a pair of hiking boots. And he got into hiking and problem settled. So if I had been the kind of person who would have been very angry about the lying, then and would not want to hear the truth, then that would have been harder for my husband to tell me the truth about not owning a pair of hiking boots.
Well, let's take a short break. I want to come back and talk about relationships, and we'll hear a wonderful story about how a lie spun out of control. When we come back, we're talking about lying today, dishonesty. What's the boundary and how gray is that boundary? My guests are Bella DiPaolo. She's a visiting professor at UC Santa Barbara. She studied extensively the psychology of lying. She's working on a new book tentatively titled How Ordinary People Become Extraordinary Liars. I'm also joined here in the studio by Sabitha Pillai-Friedman. She's a relationship and sex therapist at the Council for Relationships here in Philadelphia. Well, I'm Dan Gottlieb. You're listening to Voices in the Family. It's right here on WHYY 91 FM.
Are you concerned about a loved one who is using drugs or drinking too much? You may be eligible to participate in research conducted by the Treatment Research Institute. As part of the study, you'll be asked to attend up to 14 sessions with a family trainer and will be compensated for completing questionnaires on a weekly and monthly basis. For details, 877-I-WORRY-2, 877-496-7792. The Family Training Program supports WHYY.
On the next Fresh Air, from checkmate to head of state, we talk with Garry Kasparov. He was the youngest ever world chess champion. He's now running for president of Russia against Vladimir Putin. Kasparov is part of an opposition coalition known as the Other Russia. Join us for the next Fresh Air.
This afternoon at 3 and again tonight at 7 here on WHYY 91 FM.
Welcome back to Voices in the Family. I'm Dan Gottlieb, your host. We're talking about lies today, something that often baffles us when we've been deceived. We always ask the question, well, why? Why did they do that? Well, Philadelphian Jay DeLuzzo bought a home a few years back. He was looking for a handyman to help him with renovations. He answered an ad on the website Craigslist where a guy named Chuck had offered his services as a handyman, and it sure seemed like he found a perfect man for the job. He told this story to Mike and Scott.
The guy carried himself very well. He was tall, you know, over 6 foot, and had like a salt and pepper beard, and spoke with like this British accent, but it wasn't an accent, it was an American, it was like an American that was trying to sound like a British person. He would always talk about how he wanted a hot toddy. The reason that he talked like British in a British way was that his parents, he was raised overseas. His parents were diplomats. They worked for the State Department. He said that he used to work for Enron and was relocating, so he lost everything, of course, you know, lost all of his stocks and money and was just kind of broke. But he had gotten a new job with GlaxoSmithKline in Center City, and that he was just waiting for that job to start, and they hadn't given him his relocation money yet. But he was renting a condo over on Bank Street next to the hostel. And that's where he was living, and he's just doing this, you know, for some extra money. He'd also said that because his parents were diplomats, that they could get tickets to any sporting event for free. A couple days later, he says, do you want to go to the Super Bowl? I can get you tickets to the Super Bowl. All you got to do is pay for your hotel and flight, and you can bring a friend. I'm like, wow, that's awesome. So I get my best friend who loves football also, and we decide to go. We're all excited, and I'm about to book flights. He's like, oh, no, don't. Let me take care of the flights. You can just pay me back. My travel agent gets awesome deals. She can get the best prices for us.
At what point did you become suspicious that there was something about Chuck that you didn't entirely trust?
Well, I had a laptop I would leave in my living room, and, you know, he would use it. I'd let him use it. And I was going back through my history, and I see that there was a visit to a site called erideshare.com. It showed that he was looking for a ride to California in like a couple of weeks. You know, when he's supposed to be starting this job, this brand new like $100,000 a year job, he's trying to get a free ride to California.
So what did you decide to do?
I did some looking around. I actually replied to his ad. I made up a fake email address and a fake persona. Actually said I was a woman. He loved women. It's all he would talk about all day long. I replied to the ad, and you know, we set up a date for him to meet this girl that I had made up. And it was almost like it became kind of a game. Like my friend Leslie wrote this card. It said like, "Dear Chuck, thank you so much for this opportunity to go to the Super Bowl. I've been wanting to do it since I was 6 years old, but I couldn't because my family was too poor. My dad could never bring me. This was the opportunity of a lifetime. You're my hero." And like, we gave him the card, and he would just be like, you know, we knew that we weren't going at that point, and he would look at the card and just like, he kind of put it down. He didn't take it with him. And just like, I kept saying, "Oh, can we see these tickets? Like, I really want to see." He's like, "Oh, they're in my," he said, "they're in my vault at Citizens Bank."
Let's fast forward. The Super Bowl comes closer. When was his date set to go to California?
The day that he thinks he's going to California, getting this ride from this girl, he wants to meet at Borders. She'll pick him up and they'll just go. He's got his backpack and his green jacket that he always wears everywhere. So my friend Leslie and I go, you know, to just, we didn't even know what we were going to do. Be like, "Hey, you know, what do you say? Like, hey, you're a liar." You know, like he didn't do, there's nothing like malicious. It was just like this big made up lie. And we just wanted to just bust him. So we go and we're like, you know, we're nervous. Like, we don't know what to do. So we see him sitting with his back to us at a table at the coffee shop. And so we go over and we get coffee and we're kind of looking at him out of the corner of our eyes. And we go over to the coffee station to put the milk and sugar in. And he sees us and his eyes just get huge. He grabs his backpack and runs down the escalator. And then he was gone.
If you were to see Chuck again, what would you say to him?
I don't know, really. I just want to know what his deal is. Like, if he had just come to me and said, "Hey, I'm Chuck. I travel around the country staying in hostels and doing odd jobs for money," I would be like, "Wow, dude, that's awesome. Like, that's really cool just to be like up and about like that." But instead, he makes up these detailed stories about, you know, this fantastical life that he leads. And, you know, I don't know. I mean, I would have been just as impressed if he told me he just, you know, went from place to place.
Jay has since learned that Chuck did indeed move to California. According to an online blog, he's now telling people that he's a war correspondent for the BBC. He recently stole a laptop and a camera from a house where he was doing repair work. That interview, courtesy of our producer Mike and Scott. Well, no surprise, we're talking about lies and the people who tell them, which includes all of us at least a couple of times a day. My guests are Bella DiPaolo. She's a visiting professor at UC Santa Barbara. She studied the psychology of lying. She's currently working on a book tentatively titled How Ordinary People Become Extraordinary Liars. And joining me here in the studio is Sabitha Pillai Friedman. She's a relationship and sex therapist at the Council for Relationships in Philadelphia. Well, first, Bella, I've got it turned to you. Actually, I'd like to turn to Jay here. I don't quite know how to say this in correct parlance, but hey, Jay, you know, when somebody's got their hand in your pocket, there's a point at which you know. I mean, Bella, you know, this guy is coming in with a fake accent, saying that he worked for Enron, he's going to get a big job, and he wants a job for minimum wage, you know, moving walls. I mean,
yeah.
Some people would have picked it up earlier in the story and some later. So, you know, what's up?
You would think so. I mean, it's a fascinating story. But many of these outrageous liars are actually very good psychologists. So they know how to frame something so that you're more likely to believe them. And, you know, once you've kind of taken the first step toward believing them, it makes it harder and harder to get out of being deceived, in part because you don't want to think that you were suckered. The person you have there who told the story, I mean, good for him, because he really did eventually realize what was happening and dealt with it. But a lot of people would have gotten a lot farther with it.
Well, he dealt with it through lying.
Yeah, that's true. And I think that is one of the risks of lying is that it can be self-perpetuating. You lie, somebody realizes you're lying, and they feel disinhibited from telling their own lies.
Well, it's interesting as I think about the story that Jay did with the truth almost what Chuck did with it. It was almost a playful game.
Yeah.
It was this little playful drama.
Yeah.
It's just interesting the way these things get played out. And I want to come back to you, Sabith. We were talking about intimate relationships. Mm-hmm. And you said early on lying is inevitable. When I first started to think about an interview about lying in intimate relationships, I thought of the marriage ceremony, where we promise in public,
yes,
love, honor, and obey.
Yes.
And everybody says, I do. That's the first lie.
Yes.
I mean, you're not going to.
Well, a lot of people are changing their vow because of that.
Changing what?
They're changing their marriage vows now because they don't want to lie. So, you know, there's a movement now towards making up your own vows.
So it's almost impossible,
yes,
not to lie right from the beginning.
Well, it's very important to make your marriage a safe place to tell the truth. And that requires communication. Mm. Honest, authentic communication.
What does that look like?
Well, I usually encourage couples to sort of keep their pulse on the relationship on an ongoing basis. Talk about the relationship. Talk about things that they're not happy about. And this should actually start before the marriage, when you really talk about differences. So you find ways to talk about differences comfortably. Because differences are not problems in the relationship. It is problematic if you don't know how to deal with the relationship. So I usually encourage couples to talk about relationship, about differences on a regular basis, so you really do not have to lie about things. There are ways to actually work out differences without lying and to keep the relationship authentic.
Well, question to both of you about lying in relationships. There's one, for my money, one of the most beautiful love songs ever written was Eric Clapton's love song. Mm-hmm. Sings, "Oh My Darling, You Look Wonderful Tonight." Yes. And it sold millions of copies. The song wouldn't have sold so well if he said, "Oh my darling, you look like hell and you're breath is bad tonight." It just
yes.
So, and by the way, I'm not a songwriter for obvious reasons. So we lie. You know, when is it a good thing and when is it a bad thing to be in a relationship?
Well, I have some thoughts about this, and I'm not sure everybody will agree with me, but I do believe that couples should not go into details about their previous relationships with their spouse. Because on more than one occasion, I've had couples come in and tell me that they revealed everything. Sometimes they give all kinds of details, sexual details, details about their infidelity in previous relationships. And that sets up the relationship for problems. It can be used as ammunition in fights. Sometimes it can be used to, make comparisons. Sometimes couple, you know, one spouse may say, "Well, you used to do all these wonderful things with your other partner. Why can't you do that with me?" So I really think it may be wise not to reveal too much about your previous relationships.
And what happens if you and I are in a relationship and you ask me directly? What do I do?
Well, in that situation, it's important to give as little information as you possibly can.
Really?
Yes.
Really? So if I've been unfaithful, I shouldn't say that.
Well, you could say that you were unfaithful, but you do not have to give lots of details about it. You can say you've been unfaithful, but you have made a decision not to do this again, and you've worked on it, and you've decided that this relationship is going to be different. So you can talk about it, but it's not important. It's not necessary to talk about all kinds of sexual details.
Bella, I'd like you to weigh in on this. When is truth hurtful? When is it better withheld?
Yeah, and again, I think it comes down to the different things that you value. And so you can't just say in a blanket way, well, you can tell the truth this time and lie that time. But it's always a matter of kind of weighing what's important to you. And the difficult situations come when there are two very good values, and you value both of them, but they conflict with each other.
For example?
The one that comes up, that I like to use when people say they never lie, is the example of someone in one of my studies who said that she had a close friend who was undergoing chemotherapy, and since the last time she had seen this friend, the friend really looked a lot worse. But when she went to visit this friend, the friend said, asked her how she thought she looked. And the person who was being asked this question said that she looked fine, she looked like she was doing well, and, you know, of course it was hard, but, you know, she thought she was doing fine. And I think that's an interesting example, because are you really going to say to someone who is going through such a difficult time, oh, yes, you really do look even worse than you did before?
It really is a hard call. And if you're a good people reader, you sometimes can find out what they really want. You know,
yeah,
do they want,
yeah,
reassurance?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Let's go to the phones. We got a lot of people waiting to join the conversation. We'll start with Stephanie. Stephanie, hi, you're on the air.
Hello, how are you? Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I'm gonna stir up some controversy, and I'm gonna disagree with your experts, and say that in a perfect world, meaning that if each one of us was self-aware and, like, sort of striving to be the best person we could be, we wouldn't lie at all, because by lying, we're just always operating under this presumption that we know better, that we know what the right thing is to say for that person to hear. And specifically within the family dynamic, that's come up quite a bit in our family, with my parents. When I would ask them how they felt about something, and they would tell me what they thought I wanted to hear, when in fact they felt quite differently, and then I would find out years later, and I would make my decisions based on what they would tell me, and I'd find out years later that they in fact were very upset because they felt I didn't value something that was important to them, and had made my decision being selfish, when in fact I was making my decision based on the information that they gave me. So, that specifically in my life has been something that's frustrating, because they operated under the assumption that they knew how I would feel if they told me the truth.
So tell me the learning that comes out of that for you.
Well, I just feel as though it's our own individual responsibility to deal with the truth. Mm-hmm. And I personally, I can only speak for myself, I would rather know the truth, even if it is about an infidelity that occurred in a previous relationship with my husband and another person, or in within my own marriage, because at least then I have the facts. Now, whether I can handle it or not is not his responsibility. That's my responsibility. And I don't believe we're helping other people by, and I'll use the word enabling the areas in their life where they have difficulty coping.
Well,
I think that lying to be nice is really just a way of enabling.
Right.
So I'm not suggesting cruelty to some, you know, with the example of the cancer patient to say, well, you know, you actually look like crap. I mean, I would not recommend that, but, you know, finding ways to be compassionate. And, you know, the word kindness keeps coming up. Kindness comes in all forms.
Can I negotiate something with you?
Sure.
How about what your parents were doing instead of enabling? Underneath that was managing their own unfelt anxiety.
Oh, absolutely.
About conflict. So,
Without question. That's why I think it's really, when the liar tells the lie, it's really not about being kind to the other person, about sparing oneself from
shame or anxiety.
Well, or guilt for feeling as though they've upset someone or whatever that may be. But really, it's a very selfish motive.
All right. It's a great point. Let's hear from our experts. Let's start with you, Sabitha.
Well, in the context of family, sometimes there are different values about lying. And that sometimes sets up messages about whether you can lie or not. So if parents are lying on a consistent basis, then it sets up a script that lying is okay in relationships. So in her case, they may be lying because they are not aware of her strength to face the truth. So it's quite possible that they are not aware that she could actually handle the truth.
Well, that's back to anxiety.
Exactly.
They had anxiety.
They had anxiety about her strength and her, resilience.
Bella, I'd like to hear your take on that. Sabitha talked about parents lying, but parents, I mean, we always lie to our children when we say, it'll be okay. I mean, we don't know.
I conducted several studies of the most serious lies that have ever been told to each person that we interviewed. And college students and people around that age often told about a time when their parents lied to them about the serious illness or impending death of someone they were very close to, often a grandparent. And they felt so, in a sense, betrayed by those lies because it was as if their parents were not respecting their emotional ability to cope with it.
Exactly.
But what was really interesting is that we also asked people about the most serious lies they ever told anyone. And we never had any parents say, the most serious lie was when I withheld this awful information from my child because I wanted to protect them from having to hear something awful. And I think what's going on there is the parents think they're being compassionate mm-hmm. because they don't want to cause the emotional pain that they know this truthful information will cause, and yet the child, and often they're not really, you know, a young child, but they might be, say, in high school, they are not feeling that they were treated compassionately, but they were treated unfairly or condescendingly, or as if they weren't as mature as they thought they were. And this can be a big issue at certain ages, that you want to think that you're a grown-up, and do your parents really see you that way?
One of my mantras when I talk to parents is that when your children reach puberty, even early adolescence, that they really need our faith as much as they need our guidance.
Mm-hmm.
And too many children don't have their parents' faith that we raise them based on our unfelt anxiety. And that really is the word. It's unfelt anxiety.
Mm-hmm. And we learn parenting from our own parents. So if they have protected us and not told us the truth, we grew up that way, then we tend to parent that way, our
right.
children that way as well.
But sometimes we don't know. I remember when my daughter was getting a tonsillectomy at Children's mm-hmm. Hospital many years ago, and it was before my accident. I was walking. I'm in a wheelchair, Bella.
Mm-hmm.
So it was before my accident, and we were walking, holding hands at Children's Hospital. Was wearing her little pajamas with feet. She was adorable.
Mm-hmm.
And she looked up at me and she said, "Daddy, are you scared of my operation?"
Mm-hmm.
And I, you know, honest psychologist, Dan, huh. I said, "Well, Debbie, yeah, I am." She said, "Well, what are you scared of, Dad?" And I said, "Well, I'm afraid they'll hurt you and you'll have a bad sore throat, or I'm afraid the operation won't work and you'll still get a lot of colds." And she said, "That's not what you're scared of, Daddy." And I said, "What do you think I'm scared of, expecting something
mm-hmm.
cute?"
Mm-hmm.
She said, "You're scared I'm going to die in there."
Mm.
And I didn't know that. I mean, it took my breath
so
away.
Oh.
It, of course that's what I was scared
mm-hmm.
of,
mm-hmm.
but I didn't know that.
Mm-hmm.
Talk about unfelt anxiety.
Exactly.
It was way too big to me. Well, we're talking about lies, what they mean, how we define them, and what their impact are. My guests are Bella DiPaolo and Sabitha Pillai-Friedman. DiPello is a visiting professor at UC Santa Barbara. She's the author of Singled Out, and she studied extensively on the psychology of lying. Bly Friedman is a senior staff therapist at the Council for Relationships here in Philadelphia. Well, I'm Dan Gottlieb. You're listening to Voices in the Family. That's right here on WHYY 91 FM.
The Philadelphia Orchestra supports WHYY. The Philadelphia Orchestra performs the music of Ravel, Roussel, Higdon, and a concerto for organ, strings, and timpani by Poulenc, featuring French organist Vincent Dubois, November 8th through 10th. Tickets and information for the Philadelphia Orchestra at 215-893-1999 or on the web at www.philorch.org.
Next time on Day to Day, one of us grew up seeing friends and family die in violence in Colombia. So how does he end up singing danceable love songs?
We feel death so close to us, we just appreciate more that we are alive.
And international rockers, songs of passion and pain.
The only cure for our heart is just to dance life.
Next time on Day to Day.
This afternoon at 1 on WHYY.
We're back on Voices in the Family. I'm Dan Gottlieb, your host. We're talking about lying, really, lying. My guests are Sabitha Pillai Friedman. She's a relationship therapist at the Council for Relationships. Bella DiPello joins us on the phone, visiting professor at UC Santa Barbara. She's working on a book tentatively called How Ordinary People Become Extraordinary Liars. Let's go right to the phones. We've got Sylvia on the line.
Called How Ordinary People.
Sylvia?
Yes, hello, Dr. Gottlieb. I'm so happy to be on with you. This is a wonderful subject. I was reminded when my children were very small and we had a conversation about lying, I told them that there were three kinds of lies. One is a little white lie, the kind that you tell Grandma on the telephone. She lived 2 hours away from us, and she asked, how are you? And they had terrible colds or chicken pox or whatever. They, oh, I'm fine, Grandma. Everything's fine. Tell about school. That's a little white lie. We were protecting Grandma because my mother was the kind of person, if she heard the child had a cold, they were having pneumonia, they were dying already. So we spared her that.
And what's the second lie?
The second one is a gray lie. If a friend asks you, do you like my new dress, and you really don't, find something nice to say about it. Well, you look good in that color or that style. I like the flare skirt. Some nice thing that you can say without saying, oh, God, I hate your dress, and hurt the other person's feelings. And the last one was a black lie, which you never tell to me, to the law, if that comes into play, God forbid, or the teacher. Those were my three criteria about lying when my kids were young.
All right, so
and I disagree with the caller who indicated that you should always tell the truth. There's an expression called the brutal truth. When the truth can be brutal, that's not what you tell. If it's a legal matter, that's another story. But in general, you can hurt somebody terribly by telling people what is the brutal truth.
Okay, I'm going to ask our experts to weigh in on this. We've got a bad connection, so we're going to say goodbye to you. And thanks so much for calling. So, Bella, let me start with you. Three kinds of lies.
Yeah, and I thought her last point, too, was very interesting about the brutal truth, that sometimes people hide behind the truth. They say something really hurtful, and then they say, well, I'm just being honest. And so that kind of rounds out the picture of, you know, we think lying is always bad, but truth can be used hurtfully, too. Yes, her three kinds of lies are very interesting. She didn't specify about the last bad one, but we assume, or I assume, it's when you're lying and you're hurting someone else and there's no obvious gain for them, you know, it's not a conflict between two values, but you're just doing something exploitative or cruel or mean, and, you know, no one would want to condone those kinds of lies. The other kinds of lies where she said you don't want to tell someone that they look terrible in that dress. And I think that's true, and that's how a lot of people feel. But there's an interesting side of that, too, that some of us have people in our lives that will tell
us the truth, even when it's hard to hear. And those people can be valuable. Because let's say you were planning to wear that dress to your next job interview. Well, you know, maybe you do want the person in your life who's going to tell you how you really do look in it.
You know, you talked about the brutal truth. We've got a caller. I'm going to steal his question, steal his line. And the question is, what is the truth, really? When you talk about hiding behind the truth, and I'll turn this to you, Sabitha, you're in an intimate relationship, and I say to you, well, you always screw that up, and you know, I don't know what's the matter with you. I think you're passive-aggressive, and I'm just telling you the truth now.
Well, there are ways to tell the truth. Here's where, you know, the art of communication really comes into play. It's really important for couples to know that you can actually talk about the truth. You can tell the truth if there is enough of goodwill in the relationship. If you're having ongoing conversations about the relationship, and if it's a back and forth communication about truthfulness, then there are ways to tell the truth without hurting the other person. There are ways to tell the truth without sounding judgmental.
But if my truth is that you're passive-aggressive, what's true?
Well, that depends on, you know, how you, what's your description of passive-aggressive? Because the term passive-aggressiveness is used rather fluidly in relationships, and most of the times they mean different things. So it really is important to establish what is passive-aggressive.
So let me ask the bigger question to you, Bella. How do we understand what the truth is?
And that's really important because there isn't always a clear answer. And I'm thinking about the topic we discussed earlier about how much do you tell someone about your previous affairs that you've had? Well, it's almost similar to the question of when you come home from work and your friend or spouse says, "So how was your day?" If you don't tell the part about where you went out to lunch with someone else and it turned into more than lunch, you could say, "My day was great," and in a sense, it was great to you. You had a great time. So there's so much editing. I mean, there's never just one possible truthful answer. The "how was your day" question can be answered at so many levels.
And I even want to back up your story to the first stage about before when lunch became more than lunch. If you go out to lunch with someone, Bella, and you find this person attractive, so much so might make you a little nervous. Do you tell that or do you not tell that?
Yeah, and I think it depends on the relationship you have. I think Sabitha is really right about that.
One of my favorite stories about this, we did a show, I'll bet 15 years ago, on chronic lying, and I got a call right after the show from somebody who said they wanted to make an appointment with me to see me in therapy. And I said, "Well, why?" And he said, "I'm a chronic liar." And I didn't want to see this guy, but I didn't know what to say. So I said to him, "I don't believe you." And there was dead silence for a minute, and he said, "I'll call you later." I think I cured him.
Did you?
Great.
Because, you know, you can't be a chronic liar, just like you can't be totally honest. Some people, though, do shade over to that end of the continuum.
Become pathological liars.
Yeah. Could you tell us about them, Sabith?
Well, pathological liars are people who lie constantly and without shame or guilt about the lying. In fact, they feel anxious when they tell the truth. And this could have some underlying problems, such as they could have a personality disorder, such as borderline personality disorder or narcissistic personality disorder. And this is something that requires professional help and treatment. And if a pathological liar can really ruin a relationship. And first of all, the person who is lying pathologically needs to be aware this is causing huge problems in the relationship, and it can really destroy the relationship, and need to seek help. So this is not something that, you know, if I see one spouse in the relationship is lying pathologically, I would definitely refer that person for individual treatment.
Bella, we've only got a minute left, and it's a big question, but overall, we're not real good at picking up when we're being lied to, are we?
No, not at all. In fact, there have been hundreds of studies of this, and people are just a little bit better than chance at knowing when somebody's lying and when they're telling the truth.
Even our machinery, lie detectors, functional MRIs.
Yeah, even all that. Sometimes you can get them to be successful with a particular kind of lie, but then lies are so variable that they won't necessarily be successful in picking up a different kind of lie.
Raises questions about the value of torture.
Absolutely.
Yes, absolutely.
So we don't know what we're getting when we do that to people, and we have no way of telling whether it's truthful or not.
Right.
We are such flawed beasts.
It never, absolutely.
It never ceases
absolutely.
To amaze me and intrigue me.
Yeah.
Well, I want to thank you both so much
for joining us.
It's been a delightful and an interesting show. My guests have been Dr. Bella DiPaolo and Dr. Sabitha Pillai-Friedman. Dr. DiPaolo is a visiting professor at UC Santa Barbara. She's the author of Singled Out, and she's working on a book currently on lies and liars. Dr. Pillai-Friedman is a senior staff therapist at the Council for Relationships. They can be reached at www.councilforrelationships, one word, that's councilforrelationships.org. Well, if you want to contact us or have a show idea, we can be reached at voices@whyy.org. And you can reach me at drdangottlieb.com. Well, the engineer for today's show has been Al Banks. We had assistance for today's show from Gita Simons. Thank you, Gita. Christine Dempsey is our executive producer. Lisa Walters is our associate producer. Voices in the Family is produced by Mike and Scott. I'm Dan Gottlieb. Enjoy your week, my friends.